Keep it going. Here's his. All right. Well, the whole thing, I think, when it comes to understanding the mentality of the people that you're dealing with that are actually implementing all of these laws and everything like that, is basically that of a clinical psychopath. You know, it's not really arguable, okay? They lie without even foreseeing the consequences of their actions. They never get brought to justice. They never feel any guilt. They never apologize. It's just the most ultimate form of scumbaggery imaginable, essentially. When it comes to scumbaggery, the government has got it locked down and key. It's actually quite beautiful. Because not only can they bring you into the world, educate you to believe that scumbaggery doesn't exist, but then they can use scumbaggery to educate you about how the scumbaggery doesn't exist. And so, as a result, if you grow up surrounded by scumbaggery, you never even notice it. Kind of like the same way somebody grows up on a pig farm and never, ever complains about the smell.
Yeah, people are conditioned into obedience very easily, in fact. I mean, there's the Stanley Milgram experiment, which showed that. And so Vinny's taking a break, and I'm taking over the show. You're listening to The Vinny Eastwood Show, coming to you from Auckland, New Zealand, where Vinny Eastwood is railing against the system of dominance and oppression. And so am I, using my film Drug Lord as a means to educate the public about the drug wars, the drug war, and to help reform the drug laws that we currently have, make more sensible drug laws. And those of you who are in Auckland, who will be here on the 20th of March, you should make a stop at the Pathway to Reform conference, because some of the foremost experts in the world are coming to Auckland to talk about policy reforms and sensible drug laws that can return the drug problem to the public health sector, because currently it's handled by the criminal justice system, and that's just an appalling misuse of resources. If you have a couple of dollars that you'd like to bounce our way, please go to druglord.com and click on the link to our Kickstarter fundraiser page, which is the green link at the top right-hand corner of druglord.com. That's druglord, L-A-W-E-D, D-R-U-G-L-A-W-E-D.com. And help us finish post-production of this epic documentary. We've been working on this movie for 4 years. We've interviewed about 45 people so far, and we've taken about 25 of those interviews and edited a fantastic movie which covers the drug laws in detail and explains how New Zealand has been wrapped up in this drug war through coercion by the United States government. It's not just the drug war that New Zealand has followed the United States into. There's also the war on terror, which is something else which is equally nebulous. And I'm just going to go off on a little bit of a tangent to talk about that, because recently New Zealand has signed some legislation which allows the GCSB, New Zealand's version of the National Security Agency, to spy on the entire population pretty much at will. I mean, there are certain restrictions, but they are minor restrictions, and all the data that's being gathered is being gathered regardless of whether you like it or not. So they can have a look at that data, and who knows what might cause them to do so. You know, they might run an algorithm through your email and they see the word terrorism mentioned or bomb or something like that, and you might be a journalist who's writing about those issues. You get black flagged, and your freedom of speech is severely curtailed. Your freedom to travel may be curtailed. You might be stopped at an airport in the United States because the GCSB flagged you as somebody who might be a terrorist when you're actually a journalist and you're trying to expose the truth about the war on terror. Now you can't, because you've been silenced through the mechanisms of the war on terror. So it's it's like a Philip K. Dick nightmare future that we've inherited, all because of an incident back in 2001 where several buildings collapsed mysteriously. And, well, yeah, three buildings collapsed and one has a strange-shaped round hole in it that doesn't resemble the hole that a Boeing 747 would leave in a building. Yeah, and I wonder how many people out there. I've got Vinny's come back, and as I said, several buildings, he put up three fingers because there wasn't just World Trade Centers 1 and 2. There was World Trade Center 7, which a lot of people do not know about because it was not very widely reported that a third building, which was not struck by any airplanes, fell down all on its own, basically. It had some minor fires burning it, but the fire department had those fires under control when they were pulled out of the building, and the building crimped in the middle and collapsed in about 7.5 seconds, a 49-story skyscraper.
Which is equal to free fall speed, which means there was no resistance upon any of the falling debris in a steel-framed skyscraper, and it was the third steel-framed skyscraper in history to go down because of fire. And steel-framed building has ever collapsed due to fire before or since 9/11.
Correct. All three on one day. Isn't that odd? Architectural failure of epic proportions. Then, but the Japanese architect who designed the Twin Towers came out and said that this is highly unlikely that a plane caused this, because they were purpose built to resist that eventuality. And I find it interesting that the entire buildings from basement to ceiling to the top floor were basically a poisonous hazard with hundreds of tons of asbestos that needed to be removed, and that would have cost quite a lot of money to.
In fact, a friend of mine's sister runs like Nikkei Contracting,
yeah.
And they actually got called into the World Trade Center in 2001 to do a bid on the removal contract of all the asbestos. And they went in and go, "Wow, that's a huge job, man! This is multi-$1 million. Can't you think of anything cheaper to do than manually remove the asbestos?" And they said, "Well, we wanted to try controlled demolition, but the EPA said we wouldn't be able to because all of the asbestos dust would
kill all the first responders, American heroes left to die by their healthcare system." And I've got nothing against Obamacare. I've got something against the American government and anything that it's purports is going to help people. It's all a joke. It doesn't really matter if you're from a red state or a blue state. It's all just one purple mess. And so those first responders now have been left out in the cold because they can save money by letting them die, essentially. So that's how your government treats your American heroes.
That's how your government treats eyewitnesses.
Oh, eyewitnesses as well, exactly. You know, there's been a lot of mysterious deaths, not just related to 9/11 witnesses, but more recently there's been a whole spate of mysterious deaths. I think Philip Seymour Hoffman might be one of them. You know, it's a case of you as an opponent of the state can actually just be taken out the same way that a mafia boss will take out a reporter who's getting too close to the truth. You know, I don't think that'll ever happen to you or me. I don't think we'll ever be significant enough on the world stage to warrant an assassination attempt. But, you know, I live in hope. Come get me, Johnny K. Come get me, Johnny K.
All it takes is the right price, you know. You gotta bribe them politicians just right, you know, just right, the way that they like it, you know. You gotta have some nice girls, some beautiful champagne. You gotta wine them. You gotta dine them.
Oh yeah, and then you can, and then you can steal every dime from them.
Yep, gangster governments everywhere. You know, there's only one government in the world that I trust. I'm not saying there's only one trustworthy government, but the only one that I know about is Uruguay. And Jose Mojica, you are doing what every president or leader in this world should be doing, that being thinking about the people who you are serving, not ruling. And that's what Jose Mojica is doing. He's serving the people, not ruling the people.
Well, let's hope he doesn't get assassinated by some kind of US CIA hit squad or something like that. So you want to do this? No way, Jose.
They did it to Lumumba. They did it to, you know, they've done it thousands of times. They did it to, you know, just about half of South America has had their leader assassinated, their democratically leader assassinated or deposed in a CIA-instigated coup. So, you know, it wouldn't be beyond the spectrum of what they might be considering now. But I know that that Jose Mojica has definitely displeased the establishment, particularly the UN drugs controls agencies, by dismissing the UN International Convention on Drugs. He's basically said, nah, we already signed it, but I don't care anymore, which is exactly what he should say, because it's outdated. It was crafted in the 1940s and 50s, you know, and we're now in 2014. You know, why are we living under a regime that was crafted during World War II? That's when the drug regime that we currently have was drafted. So it's retarded, and I don't want to use that word offensively. I want to use that word accurately. It is a retarded thing to be doing. We are slowing ourselves down in the most horrendous and costly way.
Well, of course, everybody says, oh, well, what can I do about it? What can I do about it? As if it's a rhetorical question. It doesn't need an answer. Hey, look. Not everybody's issue is cannabis. All right, I accept that. I did hardcore cannabis activism involved with the same daiquiri people and Dr. Green like you were for a number of years, I think. And, you know, you go and you look up daiquiri on YouTube, guess who's got all the videos there? It's freaking me.
It's Vinny Eastwood. Yeah.
I've done heaps, bro.
We were comparing numbers earlier, listeners at home.
Yeah.
But I still maintain that 420 New Zealand is New Zealand's dedicated cannabis channel. So, folks, subscribe to 420 New Zealand. Mm-hmm. It's all one word. All my videos are made by me. And the one that was posted yesterday relates to the Pathway to Reform conference, which is happening on the 20th of March. And we've got a screen behind us, folks. And if you don't mind, we'd like to play this video for you. And you'll be able to hear Grant Hall talk about the lineup of people who are about to come to New Zealand to deliver the goods about why the drug war is such an epic failure, and how New Zealand can lead the global community into putting drug control back into the public health sector instead of where it is now, the criminal justice sector, which is causing all these problems. So I'm going to roll Grant Hall's promotion of Pathway to Reform.
Hi, my name is Grant Hall from the Star Trust, and I want you to know how excited I am about this event happening March the 20th here in Auckland at the Nathan Club. Now, we've got some of the world's foremost experts coming to New Zealand to share their wisdom with us. They want to know how we're going with our new policy innovation that will regulate scientifically proven low-risk social tonics and then have them distributed through a licensed retail channel. That solution, that approach, which has never ever been done anywhere in the world before, is why we have so much interest and so much focus on New Zealand right now. This event on March the 20th is going to set the narrative, it's going to set the tone for all the debate around this in and during this election year. It's a very, very important event. I hope to see you there. If I don't, then please tune in for the live stream, because we're letting everyone participate in the conversation. We've got a hashtag Pathway to Reform. You can get involved through social media. You can be engaged in some of the panel discussions. It's going to be an amazing day. Thank you very much for your interest and participation. See you on March the 20th.
And Thank you to the Star Trust and Grind Hall, who have been supporting the production of Drug Lord. For those of you who are watching the podcast, you see this graphic behind me. The poster was sponsored by the Star Trust. They had a designer come up with that, and this T-shirt as well. The merchandising that you can get at our Kickstarter page, which you can find by going to druglawed.com, druglawed.com, and clicking on the green Kickstarter link.
Yes, it's a worthy cause indeed. And here's the other problem as well. It hopefully might do. Like, we've talked about a number of different topics on this show tonight, you know, pharmaceutical industry, 9/11, and all of this other kind of jazz, right? Well, everything's connected by the thinnest of strands, but that thin strand is a strong link indeed, if it's a freaking unbreakable strand of truth, it is. And at the end of the day, any conspiracy that you start to realize, start to accept, can start to make you think about other things that are connected. And hopefully, watching the film Drug Lord will, in fact, enable people to understand some of the geopolitical scumbaggery that is going on around the issue, as well as link it up to a whole bunch of more ones. But
yep. As you say, Vinny, everything is connected. There are multiple strands that are interwoven here. You know, we've talked about them earlier. We talked about the prison industrial complex, the military industrial complex, which is being subcontracting the slave labor of the prisons out to make weapons, you know, bombs and so forth. We talked about that in the first segment of the show. Those prisoners are there because of the drug war. A lot of them are black. A lot of them were arrested on minor drug charges. They got massive sentences because they're the wrong color and lived on the wrong side of the tracks. You know, nobody's going to throw Will Smith in jail. Will Smith's kid in jail when he gets caught with a bong. You know, there's one law for the rich.
They did throw Wesley Snipes in jail, but
Snipes was in jail for tax evasion. That's something different. That's dissing the Fed. That won't stand. That will not stand. Snipes, word out to Snipes. Yeah. Remember, you were a taekwondo champion. You can fight off those rapists in prison. You can fight them off. When you're out, you'll be back on top.
I always thought that Wesley Snipes would like be like at prison. Do you remember when he played what was his name, Simon Phoenix in Demolition Man, where he's like this king criminal, and he gets all these other really nasty, nasty criminals unfrozen with him and stuff? You know, I reckon it'd be like that. You know, Wesley Snipes walks out of the joint and he's like head honcho.
Do you know what? I think Wes is probably the man in jail. I think Wes is like Mike Tyson in jail. He's still got his celebrity status, because all those guys in jail worship celebrities just as much as all the people outside of jail. They've all got the same programming. So, you know, Wes, if you're in jail, you know, live it up. You're still a celeb. That'll never change. Look at Lindsay Lohan.
Is Wesley Snipes still in jail? When did he go?
I don't know. You know, do we have internet access? Can we digress to find out if Wesley's out of jail?
Well, I think this is probably the most important part of the show. Is Wesley Snipes still in jail?
Okay, now I just want people to understand, we're talking about the Federal Reserve Bank, which is actually behind Wesley Snipes being in jail, because Wesley Snipes refused to pay his income tax, which you don't have to pay.
Here we are.
Find the law that says you have to pay income tax, stupid American.
April the 8th. April
stupid
the 8th.
American, find the law. When you can't find it, stop paying income tax.
Yeah.
Okay, there's Wesley. Wesley was released in... Snipes is out of prison, and Sylvester Stallone has a role in the Expendables for him. Well, you should go back to prison, Wesley, because you shouldn't be starring in any action movies with Sylvester Stallone. Okay, he's over the hill.
I don't know.
It's bad for your career.
Look. I'm going to have to take issue with that last statement. The Expendables 2 was awesome because of Chuck Norris.
I didn't see Expendables 2, but I'm prepared to watch further Expendables sequence in the hope that one of those bastards dies on screen. Like,
it's,
for
it's
real.
It's mostly
not
in the
like,
hopes
not
that
like
you
a stunt, that he actually dies. I hope it's Arnold.
It'll mostly be the reason why I thought it was really great is because of the one-liners, bro. The one-liners, there's just so many of them. If all of these action heroes have got their one-liners and everything, and what they do in the Expendables is they just recite one-liners virtually the whole time. It's freaking hilarious.
Okay, so it's basically a script of one-liners. They just coagulated all of those unused one-liners from the last 50 action movies into one script, and they just stuffed them all in there to make 2 hours of one-liner cap-off series, cap-off scenes. Okay.
With almost as many bad jokes as Batman and Robin.
Batman and Robin. Was that the Joel Schumacher version?
It was so terrible, bro. Like,
it was awful. Oh, my God. Every movie ever made by him is horrible, but movies made by me are tremendous. So go to druglord.com, druglawed.com, to watch the trailer of the forthcoming release, Drug Lord, which exposes the drug war in all its many multifarious facets.
Yeah, that's right. Fuck you, Schumacher.
Yeah, man, forget about Schumacher.
I think we're probably getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here. You know, we're just like commenting on celebrities while criticizing the general population for deifying them and all of that kind of thing. I mean, we're a bit hypocritical here.
I don't think so. I watched a recent documentary release called Propaganda, made by a New Zealander from Christchurch, Slavko Miskov. I'll have to check on that. But anyway, Slavko turned around a really brilliant piece of filmmaking. It's actually a mockumentary. So it's presented as a release by the North Korean government critiquing the excesses of consumption in the West as a state-made propaganda piece. But of course, it's actually Slavko's direction that gives the story its shape. And it sounds like a North Korean propaganda piece, and it has been confused as being a genuine propaganda piece, but it's actually a very clever critique about how out of control the West's capitalistic system has become.
And so what was that you call it? A genuine propaganda piece it was mistaken for. propaganda be genuine?
Yeah. I mean, the lines get very blurred. It is a propaganda piece, but it's a propaganda piece about, dethroning propaganda and dethroning celebrity. So, propaganda doesn't necessarily have to be false. You get good propaganda and bad propaganda. Good propaganda, for example, let's save what's left of the environment. I know a lot of people disagree about climate change, but let's just talk about pollution. You know, pollution is bad. Forget about the argument about climate change. There's too much pollution. We don't have to argue about climate change. We have to reduce pollution. It doesn't really matter if it's causing climate change. It's definitely causing the acidification of the ocean. That's a bad thing. If our coral reefs die, we all die because there'll be no fish in the oceans and there'll be no food for all the coastal areas that depend on the oceans for their food. That means those coastal people will invade the inlands, and scarce resources will then be fought over, and our entire world would degenerate into anarchy, war, famine, and chaos. So let's avoid that by living better today.
Yeah. And executing you for Rockefellers.
Well, I don't think these people should be executed because I don't believe in capital punishment. I believe they should be
excommunicated.
to like the moon. The idea of corporal punishment for really evil people, I think, is less punitive than imprisoning them for the rest of their lives and letting them stew. I think people who want revenge through corporate punishment have actually missed the opportunity to really make somebody's life unbearable just through boredom, if not through other means. I've been confined for 30 days. It's very taxing. It's taxing.
You know what? Actually, David Rockefeller will become a very popular person in prison. He'll be welcomed like a prince of darkness.
How old is Rockefeller? He must be in his 80s
now. 90s, bro. 90s. It must be like Kissinger.
90s. Incredible. It's funny that that these dudes who've had such high-stress lives live for so long a lot of the time, like Robert Mugabe. What keeps these people alive?
In a word, pedophilia.
You reckon they live just to defile...
No. It's because they defile them that they live. It's a different
really? They're like vampires, they draw their energy from innocent...
It's dark occulted mysticism, bro.
I don't know if Mugabe is into witchcraft, but... I have heard that... I think it's almost certain that Kissinger was at coven meetings in the Redwoods in California... they burned effigies and so forth, and I've seen the videos that were taped of the Skull and Bones Club, which Bush and Kerry and many other presidents and presidential candidates are members of. There was quite a gruesome ritual that was filmed from the rooftop of a neighboring building in the university campus. You couldn't clearly make out what was happening, but it looked quite demonic. So whether or not they're just enacting some ritual, some kind of hazing, hazing ritual. You know, even if it is a hazing ritual, it's quite a nebulous ritual. And you've got to ask who would participate in that stuff. Because if it was me in that coffin being screamed abuse at, I would say, "Excuse me, I'm leaving now," and I would leave. But of course, Bush and Kerry and et al., they endured that strange ritual to become members of this secret society. And that gives one pause for thought. If your leaders, if your national leaders are involved in a cult, you are in trouble. And it's not an if, they are. Well, Obama's not, but Bush definitely was a cult member. So, good luck.
Well, it's an old story, but it's a good story about the people who are in so much of a position of wealth and power.
Jeb Bush, 2016.
The wealth and power is a corrupting thing. You know, it happens to everybody. And when you are capable of getting away with anything, literally any kind of debauched act you could possibly think of, Daddy will cover it up, etc. Imagine how insane that would drive you. Imagine what that would do to your desires, your humanity, and all of these things. You know, that's what happens.
I've met traders who've told me that the wolf on Wall Street is quite accurate, that it's not even over the top in terms of what they depict. And that sort of psychopathy gets replicated throughout many power structures, and the church and government have colluded in mass child abuse rackets that were suppressed. There's a very interesting documentary about that was made by an English channel and that was completely retracted that you can see online, which documents how the cabal of Republican congressmen and senators had conscripted a male prostitute and child slave ring into their personal use that was being run under the auspices of a church charity. So they were actually guilty of all kinds of heinous acts, and none of them were ever held accountable for these things, even though this documentary proved beyond doubt that there was this mass child abuse going on. They're beyond power. They're beyond the reach of the law because of the power that they have.
And they often come down on those who've actually personally experienced it and been right in the middle of
it. The victim
kind of
becomes
thing.
The perpetrator. Mm. And many of the people who brought charges against this cabal of Republican pedophiles and rapists were themselves destroyed in terms of, they were vilified, they were presented as liars and as extortionists. Meanwhile, they were just fighting for some minor compensation compared to what they'd undergone over years of abuse, systematic abuse and slavery, actually. I can check online for the name of this documentary. It'll pop back in my head, but it's terrifying. And currently, the kinds of abuses that are going on, I think they've gotten the pedophilia rings under control within the Republican Democrat dual dictatorship. But now,
do you mean by better control, they're now able to cover them up a lot better?
Well, we don't hear about it as much. but in terms of the incursions of the weapons and the military industrial complex into the government, it's quite incredible that a director of Raytheon, the company that produces smart bombs amongst other weapon systems, their vice president is Obama's one of his chief advisors, I think, to Obama is this Raytheon vice president. So if the guy who's making the bombs is advising the president, he's probably advising him to drop those bombs on as many people as the president can get away with bombing. That's just the way Western style capitalism profits. So it doesn't matter what the product is, it has to go off the shelves, it has an expiry date, and Raytheon needs to produce new and smarter bombs to drop on brown people and black people. Not so much black people, the black people aren't getting bombed anymore, but a lot of brown people are getting it from Raytheon. Although, no, that's actually not true, because you've got the Congo and Central Africa. No, black people are also getting bombed. But it's more limpet mines than smart bombs. It's more paramilitary-style weaponization of Africa. But
Well, and then, of course, there's the Israelis to talk about in Palestine.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I'm classing the brown people as, you know, the Arabs, the South Americans, and the black people, specifically the Africans. But, yeah, you know, you white people need to be careful, because it's only a matter of time. They're going to run out of people of color to bomb, and then they're going to bomb white people. That's going to be a bit of an eye-opener. I mean, it's kind of started to happen, but it's, it's going to happen more. It's not just going to be, you know, the former Yugoslavia. It's going to be bombs dropping in civilized Europe, you know. It's going to be bombs dropping soon, because the bombs have been made, and that means they have to be used.
Isn't that interesting how you would, let's say, stack poison or weapons and what have you, and they've got a use-by date, so it's like, oh my God, I have to kill somebody.
You can't. I was talking to Vinny earlier before the show about the weaponization of ecstasy during the apartheid years by the apartheid government in South Africa, where Wouter Besson made an aerosol ecstasy for crowd control, which was, you know, going to be blasted at the crowd using water cannons, this ecstasy dust, to basically pacify a crowd in the event of a riot. And they sold a lot of this ecstasy on the black market, tons of it. I don't know if you could say tons of it, but hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of ecstasy tablets were sold by Wouter Besson. And many barrels of the stuff, and a barrel would contain 50,000 tablets, were dumped in the ocean to dispose of the evidence of this crime, basically this weaponized ecstasy. And they weren't just weaponizing ecstasy, they were weaponizing a whole bunch of chemicals for use in crowd control, for use in interrogations, for use in all kinds of nebulous acts. And so I just wonder how many fish and other aquatic creatures were poisoned in the mass dumping of ecstasy and other drugs into the ocean to dispose of these state drug crimes, you know, that were perpetrated during South Africa during the apartheid years. You know, the costs of the drug war are insane, because Wouter Besson wouldn't have been able to do this in a regulated market. It was only because he could make so much money for his other off-the-books activities that he went into the ecstasy business and decided to weaponize ecstasy. It was a perfect opportunity. If you could purchase ecstasy legally, Wouter Besson wouldn't have done this. There wouldn't have been much point. Or there certainly would have been less profit to incentivize him to weaponize ecstasy.
I was told the creation story of ecstasy. Apparently, you know how everybody calls it E, right? Apparently, that originally stood for empathy, not ecstasy.
And
they prescribed it for family violence or something like that. I mean, like,
yeah, it was a pharmaceutical augmentation of the psychiatric process, and it was being used extremely well. It had incredible results during the time when it was still legally available, and then it became a party drug, and it was in Texas where the first laws against ecstasy were drafted. Because it didn't fit in with the ruling agenda's idea of what a drug should do and the psychological states that a drug should produce. The drugs of preference in the Western world, which is now just about everywhere, the Western demagogy is spread everywhere, is that drugs that help you produce goods and be a good worker, such as caffeine and tobacco, those are the drugs that need to be legally available and which are in every country on earth. the ones that keep you productive, if I can use that word liberally, because you're not producing, you're obeying. Unless you're actually producing, I'm not talking about everybody who's listening to the show, and many of you might actually be creators rather than producers, and in which case, go ahead and be creative. But most people are just being productive within the economic system of producing basically goods of little value to be traded to bolster supposed economic growth and keep it high, which is impossible. So I advise people to use drugs that help them break out of that cycle, get away from caffeine if you can, or use it in moderation because it's quite a powerful drug. The U.S. Air Force uses it to keep their pilots alert when they're flying missions and delivering nuclear payloads from one silo to another. So it's a very powerful drug, and its use is to keep people alert and working. Use it less. Use these other drugs, like, for example, Carver. Calms you down, gives you nice dreams, and it's legal. So you don't necessarily have to break the law to find these other mind-altering substances that break you out of the kind of cage of your legal choice of pharmaceuticals, tobacco, caffeine, and alcohol. That's your little legal box, those four. And, you know, I advise people to break out of that square box and, you know, round out your world, round out your psychological experience on this earth by seeking these altered states of consciousness with drugs that enlighten and free you of the box mentality.
Humanity's been taking drugs since forever.
Dawn of time.
You know, I mean, if anything, I credit drugs with base principle frickin' growth.
The development
in humanity's,
of the outer cortex.
In humanity's, like, evolution kind
exactly.
of thing. As well as, also, apparently, cannabinoids, endocannabinoids, you might want to think about interviewing Dr. Bob Malamed about this, bro.
Well, when will he be here?
He won't be here.
Oh, online.
He'll be on Skype, yeah. But anyway.
Good man.
Yeah, yeah. You've heard of Dr. Bob Malamed, you know what he's doing?
He's been in many of my favorite movies.
Yeah. So, you know, you might know him just as well as I do. But, yeah, endocannabinoids, ladies and gentlemen, cannabinoids from within. They build everything in your body. Everything.
If you didn't have them, you would be dead, and that's the exact same molecule that the cannabis plant naturally produces.
And isn't it the same molecule that these motherfuckers are trying to patent?
That is correct. So, well, there are 60 known, possibly more now, variations on the cannabinoid molecule. So they are patenting specific variations for use in specific medical conditions, whilst at the same time denying that cannabis has any medical benefit, thereby enabling them to schedule one it in their drug control regimen. So it's just, you know, with one side of their mouth they're saying no medical benefits, with the other side of their mouth they're talking to their patent lawyers to make sure that you cannot use that particular molecule for your own benefit without going through them and paying them a tribute.
Hold on a second. We own this molecule that has no benefit. So if you want any benefit from it, you can't have it yourself. You've got to come and pay us in order to give you the benefit from this molecule, which has no benefit.
Exactly.
That makes a whole lot of sense.
And you know the applications they're only just starting. We have David Nutt commenting on our in our medical segment about the fact that the cannabis plant has more medical applications than any other plant, and that there's an entire tranche of research that has been suppressed, never got done, was never authorized. They wouldn't supply the substrates to conduct the experimentation and the investigation into all the medical benefits that are still to be discovered. Because the cannabis plant was illegal, it was to do these experiments for the last 40 years, that's one of the greatest tragedies of all, because there would be hundreds of diseases out there that we would have cured, or we would know that cannabis can provide palliative care for these diseases, had we been allowed, or had the scientific world been allowed to conduct the research. Another cost of the drug war.
That's if you're keen on not enduring huge quantities of human suffering and profiting greatly by it.
True, true. While we're talking about endocannabinoids, and Vinny, you mentioned that they're one of the substrates to build your body and to actually keep your genes healthy and functioning. Your cells healthy and functioning. Endocannabinoids are present in your mother's milk. They are in breast milk, and they are there because one of the side effects of ingesting cannabinoids is that it stimulates appetite. So the little baby is getting a natural dose through the breast milk to stimulate his or her appetite, to encourage her to eat the breast milk to grow healthy and strong. So, you know, the idea that this molecule can damage a child's brain needs to be investigated seriously, because if it could, why over the millions of years that we've evolved, and primates have the same mechanisms as well in their breast milk, are we feeding our tiny infant tots it naturally? So during that stage of the brain development, it's probably a necessary part of growing up and Here's the irony. A woman in, I think, New Plymouth was found guilty of child abuse because they detected breast milk with cannabinoids in it and charged her for intoxicating her child. And this woman didn't go on the internet for 5 minutes, or her lawyer didn't go on the internet to find out that the charges are themselves completely bogus, because even if she had never smoked any cannabis in her life, cannabinoids would naturally be present in her breast milk. So the charges are basically fabricated. Probably she was smoking cannabis, and probably she might not have been the greatest mother. And I don't know her, don't know the case in too many details. Maybe she was doing something else and the authorities wanted to book her on something and they used this as an excuse. But Mother Nature would have laughed at this. If Mother Nature, you know, had been consulted, this would have been thrown out of court immediately, because every mother on this planet has given cannabinoids to her child if she breastfed.
Well, that actually does beg the question, is smoking weed and breastfeeding your child a good idea?
They did a study in Jamaica to show that it doesn't really have a high impact.
Of course they do, if it was done in Jamaica. How did I know that?
I don't buy that. I don't think it's advisable. And I think that people should have more respect for their unborn child to take a chance. So, but we know, though, that the effects of alcohol on the unborn fetus and the effects of cigarettes are traumatic. If there are effects from cannabis, they are less obvious. So, but don't take the chance, you know. So what if the research hasn't been done? If you are pregnant, don't ingest anything. Don't ingest coffee. Don't ingest any drug. It's possibly going to harm your child, so don't do it.
I think that's fair enough. But then again, I've heard a lot of other studies as well coming out that are saying that there's these thresholds or something like that.
Yeah.
That there's small quantities of usage. Say, like, for example, a pregnant woman can get away with like a glass of wine, per night or something like that in order to be. And then everybody's really kind of like thinking everything's really soft and squishy. But
the
body's
glass.
Really, really good at making stuff safe once it's ingested to a large degree.
To a large degree. Well, take the old a glass of wine if you're pregnant theory. Alcohol is toxic to every cell that it comes into contact with. So some of that alcohol is going to come into contact with your baby's little brain. That's for sure. It's not all going to get filtered out by your liver. Some of it's going to make it to your baby's brain. What quantities are acceptable? I'd say you don't want to take a chance. So even though I've never been pregnant, I wouldn't take that chance, and it's unlikely that I ever will. But it's not something that you should do. Don't drink at all. Think about your child, respect your unborn child, and don't take any drugs. And I know that might be hard, and if you're going to have a chocolate now and then, it's got caffeine, and yeah, okay, that's okay. And, you know, maybe a glass of wine every now and then is okay, but, like, respect the unborn.
In that case,
respect the unborn.
When it comes to smoking weed, how young is too young?
I would say a safe benchmark is 20. And I discourage teenagers from ever trying it, although they will. And should they do so, they should receive honest education about the risks and how to reduce the harms and how to not use it repeatedly, because I have met people who do use it too much, and there are impacts on them in later life. And those can be obviated by regulation. You know, those can be reduced through a sensible policy. The Just Say No approach that Ronald Reagan and Nancy Reagan gave us. Yeah, you know, they can't even keep a zero policy within their own families. You know, the Bush zero policy within their own families. The Bush sisters are known to use pot, you know. So George Bush's own daughters, drug warrior George Bush, his own daughters don't respect his prohibition.
Probably because they know he worked for the CIA and was instrumental in bringing in most of the harder drugs.
Yeah, so comparatively, you know, what's a joint or two on a Saturday night? Yeah, you know, but Bush himself was himself a user, not just of, speaking of hard drugs, not just of marijuana and alcohol, but of cocaine. But he was young. I was young. And folks at home, that means that what I did back then when I was avoiding the Vietnam War is okay, because it was the 70s.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the 70s, the only decade known to man from which all behavior during that decade is excusable, because it was that decade.
It was the 70s.
You napalm people, bro. Hey, bro, it was the 70s.
It was the 70s. Yeah, you know, the 70s were a very permissive era, permissive of genocide, permissive of illegal wars, permissive of, you know, all kinds of things that... human trafficking that were being conducted in the name of democracy. Mm-hmm. So it's all mighty righty and whitey and tidy.
Yeah. Well, it's just a global takeover. I mean, look, if anybody's got any freaking illusions, okay, there absolutely positively is a group of people who run the world, who run your life, who freaking own you like cattle and slaves and scum.
They changed. Yeah. This group is malleable. It's not like one cabal, you know. It's I think people believe that it's like always one group, but it's groups vying for dominance within the upper tiers of the hierarchy, you know.
Like what Ian Wishart's got to say about this. He says it's not conspiracy theory, it's convergence theory. Much like a shark attack, each shark has its own motivation, but they all got the same target. You.
Exactly, exactly. Yep, sharks are deadly predators. I think that the way that these cold-blooded psychopaths operate is quite shark-like, in that a shark is driven basically by one thing. Hunger. And in the case of a shark, it's hunger for meat or anything that it can digest. And in the case of our political elite, it's hunger for power. And it's an out of control system. You know, how humankind now has the technology for direct democracy. We have the internet. We have instant communication. We could actually be instituting a democratic system, a truly democratic system that's not dependent on voting. You're voting for a thing, an issue, an action, rather than a person who is then going to vote for the issue. And you have no control over how they actually vote on the day when the issue is brought forward in your parliament or wherever these laws, these actions are decided. Direct democracy through the internet, through other instant communication media, is completely achievable right now. It's merely the case that the ruling elite will never allow that system to be instituted or even tested, because once it is tested, it'll be so obviously more successful than the current way that we rule our countries. It'll replace the traditional system of governance within years.
It worked in the Solomon Islands, I think, and I think their government was set up by large part by a New Zealander called Calvin Alp. And then, of course, the Solomon Islands got invaded by people who were funded by the New World Order. It's just, you know.
Don't tell me more. I don't know about the Solomon Islands issue.
Okay. You know, you pay a credit card in New Zealand, you know, 22%. The Solomon Islands, you can get 12% because they kicked the banksters out. All right. You know, they basically sussed it. And then they had all these gold mines and everything there, you know, lots of reserves, lots of money, all of that sort of stuff, totally self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, because they were having such successful workings with their direct democracy party, which got elected to power not too long ago, I think. Well, yeah, sets off a bad example.
I don't have that. Yeah, well, you find that almost all governance, excluding Uruguay and some other fortunate countries, is based on economic growth. So as soon as the Solomon Islands decided to opt out of that system of supposed economic growth, they just hung a target on their backs. And it doesn't take long for the IMF or the World Bank or the IMO, the International Monetary Fund, to exert control over whatever it is that you're trying to achieve there and institute an agenda that suits them. And you know, like we're talking about who controls this planet, you know, they all these bodies are themselves cooperating and competing. At any given moment their allegiances can change, and you know, as those allegiances change, all kinds of geopolitical fallout just happens in the wake of those changes, you know. And who they are, like, if I can identify some of the main ones, the Catholic Church is one of the main ones, well, specifically the papacy. The Federal Reserve Bank is a huge one. The World Bank and all of the affiliates to the World Bank. The UN. Sometimes they're the Chinese government. Sometimes they're working in collusion, and sometimes they're competing. And, you know, we as people on the street really don't know what they're deciding behind closed doors. The Bilderbergers, now it's out pretty much in the open that there is this cabal. Each of the members of the Bilderbergers is affiliated to another organization or multiple organizations in the background. So, you know, it's like Game of Thrones, it's really happening, and they don't have magic, they have technology, which is the same as magic at the level at which they're using it.
And they've got it in throes, you know, and even worse than that, they've got scumbaggery.
They do, they have that on their side. The Machiavellian philosophy has proved to be extremely useful in the ascension to power and the winning of wars. And it doesn't say be a nice person and share. It says steal and lie and kill, poison your enemies, and pillage their wealth. That's essentially what humankind's ruling elite has been doing for the last several thousand years.
That said, even though there's a system that's attacking everybody from every single direction, doesn't mean it's not a system that has everybody, one of us, attacking it from every single direction.
No, no, no. Distraction and diversion are key system, are key parts of the system of control. If you can confuse the person who you're exploiting or subjugating into thinking that you are not his enemy, but somebody else who is your enemy is that person's enemy, then you can use that person's energies to destroy your own enemy whilst stepping back and allowing the process to happen. All you need to do is to miseducate both parties. And yeah, we find that happening. I mean, that's been a system of colonial control since day one, for example, in Rwanda, where the Belgians miseducated the Hutus and the Tutsis into thinking that they were historically a master-servant. They held a master-servant relationship historically, which they never did. They coexisted, and the Hutus were turned into the clerics of the Belgian colonial government. And as soon as the colonial government was deposed, the Hutus had built up such an entrenched hatred of their former brothers, the Tutsis, that they cut off their arms and legs and heads and mutilated them with pangas in the world's most atrocious genocide since World War II. So you know, that's how you use the people you're subjugating to do your bidding and destroy each
also,
other rather than destroy you.
Also one of the cheapest genocides
cheapest?
Ever. 10-cent machetes, bro. No just bullets, no nukes, no
provided
nothing.
By,
just chop the
provided by
everywhere.
The Belgian government. And the CIA had a part in the execution of Lumumba, who was seen as a communist sympathizer. So the democratically elected government of Patrice Lumumba was deposed through the CIA-backed assassination, and Lumumba was hacked to death and his body burned and tortured before they killed him. So, you know, the legacy of these coups and overthrows is still with us today. You know, Africa is a complete mess because when the colonial governments finally gave up direct control, they instigated puppet governments through all these tin pot dictators and continued to plunder those countries for their wealth, and they still do to this day. But their chickens are coming home to roost in terms of the immigration problem. You know, people in the States and in Europe are complaining about the wave of immigrants. Those immigrants are chasing wealth that's being stripped from their own countries and is now in Europe and North America, well, specifically America and Canada. So they have to follow the wealth because they're impoverished in their own countries. You know, the immigration problem is being caused by the movement of money, the movement of wealth, and the movement of commodities. If the commodities and the wealth were to move back to the places that they originally came from, you know, the mines in the Congo, you know, the oil in Angola, those immigration problems would reverse. Angolans would love to come back to Angola if they had jobs and security there, but they can't, so they have to immigrate to Europe. So, yeah, it's the globalized economy that's driving the immigration crisis.
And again, our favorite man, David Rockefeller, one of the biggest, most influential key factors in world history to force globalization than any other factor.
And his dad actually created the situation that we have today where oil is our principal fuel. When prior to that, it was actually hemp. Hemp was the number one fuel on the planet for thousands of years. You know, it basically was there at the cradle of civilization. One of the first plants that early agriculturalists grew was one of the first five plants in the Fertile Crescent where civilization was born, where the agrarian way of life, the settled way of life, replaced the nomadic life, and cities grew up around hemp fields, and paper was created out of hemp, and history was recorded. The earliest histories and earliest pharmacopoeias were written on hemp paper in China and in the Middle East. You know, that was what was driving civilization and progress, and it was made illegal in the 20th century, and we're still living with the fallout of that today. You know, we wouldn't have all this argument about global warming due to CO2 emissions because of the burning of fossil fuels if we were making biodiesel out of hemp, if we had if we had the hemp fields to supply those biodiesel, those locally producing biodiesel factories with zero emission biodiesel. That's what hemp offers. So, you know, would there be an argument about climate change? No, there would not, because there'd be an alternative fuel that would be readily available in any corner of the globe that has sun and soil. You could produce this biofuel. You can produce this biofuel on six continents. And in countries like Australia, you could produce vast, vast quantities of it. And you know, it's not just a biofuel, it's a food, it's a medicine, it's a textile. It's got 50,000 industrial applications.
It's close enough to being everything.
It is the perfect plant. If there was only one plant that humanity needed to survive in the future, when all other species of plants can no longer live on a polluted earth, the hemp plant will still be growing and feeding us and fueling us and providing us with shelter and medicine and clothing. They know that because it's the only thing that they can plant around Chernobyl to mop up the radiation from the soil. Nothing else works, and this plant grows just as well in radioactive soil and mops up the soil and cleanses the soil as it does in fertile soil.
But what happens to that radiation afterwards? I've always wondered this. It sucks up the radiation somehow, but does that mean you're just themselves, left
with... Well, you're left with radioactive hemp plants, but at least other things can now grow in the soil. So you can replenish the biodiversity of the soil. So, yeah, look, it's not a perfect solution, but then what is the perfect solution for the worst, you know, nuclear disaster on the planet since Hiroshima?
I guess, yeah.
But there's
Fukushima as well. Which was like 10,000.
Well, you know what? They're going to start growing hemp around there. That's my prediction. They're going to have to.
What, in the Pacific Ocean?
No, in the coastal regions that have been affected
but
by
at the end of the day,
Pacific Ocean is empty. You
know, if genetic engineering could give us anything, cannabis that can grow in the ocean, seaweed.
Seaweed indeed. I don't know if they'll ever reach that stage with hydroponics because of the salinity of the ocean. But, you know, definitely hydroponics has reached the stage now where we can produce absolutely perfect medicinal plants, and we can not only produce plants that are high in the molecules like THC, tetrahydrocannabinol, we can produce plants that are high in CBD, which don't have any associated psychoactive effects. They're sedative, they're tranquilizers, but not in the same sense that a Valium is. Basically, they calm your body. They can help people with all kinds of nerve disorders, multiple sclerosis, childhood ADD. They basically are an absolutely perfect non-toxic drug that can be administered with titrated doses and can be manufactured by you on your windowsill. So, you know, that's the reason why cannabis is illegal. It's too valuable. You can't let that genie out of the bottle.
Oh, Eric, it's been really nice, bro. Eric Rice, and he is the maker, the filmmaker for Drug Lord, the documentary. That's Lord with a W. And you can check it out and support them on Kickstarter. Druglord.com is the website there.
Click the green Kickstarter link.
Click the green link, incidentally. And thank you very much, bro, for your time and your expertise and your efforts to expose a little bit of the vast spectrum of scumbaggery that's out there. It's quite noble.
If they are the big tree, we are the small axe. Bob Marley.
Indeed. Have a good time, ladies and gentlemen.
Job bless.
Thank you very much for listening.
Good night. You are the only exception for you.